Football! America is live and underway here on ESPN Plus. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. You've long asked the question, what happens when production has too much time on its hands?
There you go.
I think we just saw the answer. So there it is, Chiellini, El Chiellini.
Yeah, El Chiellini, hermano, ya eres mexicano.
Yep, he loves tacos, he loves guac.
Does not like pineapple on his pizza, but he enjoys a good taco.
Well, remember, I think when we had him in studio, he was like, he was amazed at all the different sauces that he found in Los Angeles. I'm sure now he's getting accustomed. He knows what to use the guacamole on, what to use sauces on, which tacos. He's getting it all sorted out.
Yeah, I hope he's gone to Leo's and got some good pastor taco. Have you been to Leo's taco?
Yeah, I have.
We've taken you. Yes, we've taken you.
Okay. Did you pay?
Production. I may have paid.
Okay. That's all that matters. We got a lot coming up on this show. Interviews with Pellegrino Matarazzo, of course, the manager, the American-born manager of Stuttgart in the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga season starting in 24 hours, Herc. Of course, that available for you all season long here on ESPN+. We're also going to have an interview with Amanda Vandevort. She's the president of USL Super League, which is going to be their second division in the women's game next year. Also, the USL W League, which just wrapped up their first campaign. Plus, we got the latest on a busy transfer window, which today, hours ago, minutes ago, just closed across Major League Soccer. But let's start, Herc, with an event that you and I were at last night here in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, the 2022 League's Cup Showcase, sort of the bridge to the big, big event, which we know will kick off next year. Of course, for the biggest brands in all of North American soccer on display. It was sold out, over 71,000 in attendance. The first ever soccer games at SoFi Stadium. The Galaxy beat Chivas 2-0. Dejan Jovetic and Jonathan Perez, the goal scorers in that one. Second game was 0-0 between LAFC and America. America winning 6-5 on penalties. I was looking up the attendance, right? 71,189. You know what the attendance was at the Super Bowl?
What was it?
Which was, what, 9 months ago in the same building?
Correct.
70,048. So the League's Cup Showcase had a better attendance than the Super Bowl, Herc. Something, nothing, or everything.
Why are you the way you are?
Because I'm exagerado and you know it.
Yeah. Well, it's not nothing because if you can pack in midweek 72K, you said?
Yep, just short of that.
For a glorified friendly, it's a showcase between two teams. But granted, three of those four teams are struggling, if you will, in leagues play. You get that kind of turnout. It's definitely something, right?
Why not everything?
But it can't be everything because we're comparing it to the Super Bowl. I mean, think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Cheapest ticket for a League's Cup match. Let's go on the high side. Maybe $100.
Right. Okay. For last night, you're saying.
Yeah. For last night.
And there was a lot of demand.
Yeah. Huge demand. $100.
Right.
That's not an easy ticket. That's not like, all right, I'm going to go take out my family of five and, you know. Okay. What do you think the cheapest ticket was for the Super Bowl?
Sure. Much more.
$6,000.
Okay. Sure.
No, not much more. $6,000. I was at the Super Bowl that stadium.
Did you pay for your $6,000 ticket?
No, I did not. Thank you very much, ESPN. But I was at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's something different.
Okay, you're comparing ticket prices. Let me ask you about a comparison in atmosphere, because I thought the atmosphere in there was electric last night, with one notable exception, something we've talked about a lot on this show. We did hear the chant. We heard it
twice.
Multiple times, and there was no stoppage in play. That aside, and that is a big aside, we'll always say that. I thought the atmosphere was just like really, really remarkable. I wonder how you thought the atmosphere from this compared to the atmosphere at a Super Bowl, which usually is much more corporate. Of course, when the Rams were playing, it was somewhat of a home field advantage. You say the atmosphere was better last night?
You mentioned corporate. I think that's a perfect way to describe the atmosphere at the Super Bowl. It's
great. Totally. It's
an awesome atmosphere. You're going to have your little concert. You're going to see a great spectacle. It's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience. But it does feel corporate. Mm. This is a fiesta.
Yeah.
This is electric. This is in your face, for better or worse. And it was in your face in a way that I've not experienced. I don't know if you've experienced this. But think about a place anywhere else around the world where you can put two of the most hated rivalries, okay? Like Chivas and a Club America.
Right.
Two of the most storied franchises, biggest brands in Mexico. The LA Galaxy, the franchise brand of what was Major League Soccer for the longest time, with its new neighbor and their big stars. Put them all in the same place.
Yeah, and not have any problems.
And not have any problems.
With the aside, of course, of hearing the chant. We can't say no problems. But we were all surprised that there wasn't violence,
I'm surprised.
Right? We were kind of taken aback. It was a very, I don't want to say family friendly, but it felt like a very safe environment for having all sorts of tinder in there.
I'll go really quickly back to the chant. It was maybe the sound system wasn't working. No, because we heard that. Right, we heard them run test on it right before the game. So we know that was up and running. So I don't know what's going on right there. But yes, much more of a family environment.
Yep.
Much more of a festivity, festival, if you will, a celebration, a showcase in every sense of the term. It was unlike an atmosphere I've ever experienced.
Right. All right. So the bigger question is then, because I think what we saw last night really is the best case scenario. You have the biggest brands possible in this competition, and you had them in the best market possible in this competition. Yep. So if we roll it forward from 2022 to 2023, is what we saw last night something that you can carry over once everybody's involved, once all 47 teams in the two leagues are involved?
If you're asking me if we're going to see the same type of environment from day one, no, because you've mentioned and you said it, and it's clearly what we have to focus on here. That's a hand-picked best-case scenario. I'm taking the two of the biggest brands here and two of the biggest brands there and putting them into the mecca of football on the West Coast, which is Los Angeles.
And the home market for two of those brands.
That's best-case scenario for everybody who runs Leagues Cup, for everybody who works in television. That's what you want. But I was working Football Picante a while ago, maybe 6-7 months ago, when the idea of Leagues Cup and the format of the tournament, the mini World Cup, came about. And I was with Chelis, who was an ex-coach of mine at Puebla, who now works with us in TV. He's our colleague. And he said, "This is terrible. Could you imagine Cincinnati versus Puebla in a neutral venue?"
And this is a guy who coached Chivas USA, too.
But it's true. You may get a lot of more of those games that people are just going to be like, whatever. Unless you're a Cincinnati fan, unless you're a Puebla fan, unless you're a Querétaro fan or a San Jose fan, you're not going to really care about. But when you get into the nitty-gritty, when you get into the upper echelon, when you get to the elite, the cream of the crop, that's when it gets good.
So what they're banking on, basically, is that people who like individual teams will care when it's not their team playing against an MLS. And to that end, I was interested in something last night, because the Chivas Galaxy game was half full. It wasn't full, right? It wasn't full for the first game. And I think that was reflected not just in the atmosphere, but in kind of the intensity of the game itself. For the LAFC America game, it was packed. And what that tells me is, yes, LAFC and America fans were there. You know what else it tells me? The Galaxy fans stayed. The Chivas fans stayed. And I know that LAFC has its interests and its stars, and America has its reasons to watch too. But if I'm Liga MX or if I'm MLS, that makes me hopeful. Not that everybody is going to watch Cincinnati Puebla, but that there will be some interest from people not involved in those games.
Can I increase your hope here?
Okay.
The producer just whispered something into my ear.
Go on.
The little angel right here.
Angel, devil, depends on
the producer and I live in Los Angeles.
Yes, okay.
It's 5:30 midweek in Los Angeles on the 405 get to the stadium. You think people are going to go out of work and get there? Listen, the Laker games, Clipper games, whatever you want, the same thing happens. People are fashionably late in Los Angeles, but they still show up, and you saw that.
Okay. Another thing that'll dictate, I think, just how much the intensity of last night carries over is the prize money, which we have been hearing of late is going to be pretty big. So once we really get a grasp of what that is, how it compares to like MLS Cup and CONCACAF Champions
League. Could you imagine if it's more?
Oh, I think it has to be more, right? It has to be more to really get these.
What would that do to the player?
Oh, to buy in. Yeah, it'll definitely be intense for sure. Speaking of, we had a chance last night to talk to Mikel Arriola, the president of Liga MX. And of course, it was a Hercules Gomez question that led to the headline quote from Arriola. Let's listen in here.
Are you worried that maybe Liga MX could be falling behind a bit in terms of competitiveness? Because we've already seen the Campeones Cup, where Columbus wins. We've seen the CONCACAF Nations League that the U.S. wins. Copa Oro Gold Cup that the U.S. wins. World Cup qualifiers that Mexico couldn't beat Canada or the U.S. We now are seeing, League Cups games, the CONCACAF Champions League. Are you worried in those terms in competitiveness about falling behind?
I am worried and I'm working because the level of investment of MLS increased 600% in 12 years. We want that kind of investment, because if we don't do that, we will lose in the following 5 years. So the main plan of the Mexican League is to increase the level of investment.
All right, Herc, so some interesting comments there from Arriola. He says he's worried. I wonder which side you think he's more worried about in terms of keeping up or getting surpassed by MLS. Is he worried more on the field, i.e. sporting, or off the field, i.e. business?
Business, financial. That's what it comes down to. It's the numbers. It's the money. Because the first thing he says, he's talking about investment, 600%, talking about falling behind in the money. Where is this money that Major League Soccer is getting? Why can't we get some of this money? Because if it was sporting, well, you wouldn't be going looking for a marriage with Major League Soccer. You'd be going back to Copa Libertadores, Sudamericana. You'd be saying, hey, this national team, maybe we play a little bit more Copa America. What can we do to get better in our football, on the field, sporting-wise? Not how can I make my wallet fatter, because we know that this rivalry sells.
Do you think he was also maybe a little bit selling, not the rivalry, but the League's Cup, to kind of tell us, hey, no, in Mexico, we are worried. We do think of MLS as a rival. He did also answer the question, I think it's important to say, when we asked him directly about kind of how he felt about Seattle Sounders winning that first CONCACAF Champions League and it happening under his watch, he did seem a little bit hurt, you know? You won't find that?
I don't know if I'm
Come on.
He's very political. I asked him about promotion relegation, and they put a pause on it. He's like, wow, there's no pause. We have it going on. Yeah, they got a requisite where you have to go through, jump through hurdles and do this and that, and there's only like three certified teams that can actually get promoted. So it's not really promotion relegation. That's expansion.
Do you think he's not actually worried about on the field? Because the data would suggest over the last decade that he should be. The gap is definitely closing, and over the last 5 years, it's closing quickly.
He should be, because you want to compete and you want to continue to be the best. So, yeah, you worry about who's number two. You worry about your dance partner. But what's the most watched league in the United States?
Well, it's Liga MX. But if you don't take care of business, you won't be that for long, right?
What's the most popular national team?
Mexico. Okay, but if any business is just going to sit on its laurels and say, well, we got it now. What happened to Major League Baseball? What happened to horse racing? What happened to boxing? Those were all the top dogs at one point.
Well, Major League Baseball is still top dog in their sport.
Okay, yes. Okay, we're not going to do this. God, can't do anything. Let's move on to some other news of the day. Jorge Sanchez. No, I mean.
Go to Jorge Sanchez.
Incredible, dude. Incredible. The move to Ajax looks like it's a done deal. The 24-year-old American Mexican national team right back is reportedly going to sign a 5-year contract with the Dutch Giants. He'll join up with El Tri teammate and also a former America player, Edson Alvarez. Ajax are the defending champions of the Eredivisie, which of course means Champions League football. And according to TUDN, the fee will be what? Right around $3 million. So, Herc, what do we think about this as a landing place for Jorge Sanchez? And again, what is a World Cup year?
I love it. Absolutely love it. I wish this was the landing place. This was the move for Diego Lainez. Like, this is such a great move for him. You talk about a defender who's still very raw, a player who's still very raw, but the intangibles are there. I mean, as a defender, how athletic he is, how he's so committed to defending, his ability to get up and down in the field. He's raw, absolutely, but he's in a great tactical league. He's going to be in a setup where they're going to develop as well. Mm-hmm. Few leagues, few setups like Ajax will actually demand that you win, but also develop you.
Right.
And this is one of those situations. And if I know he's prone for his mistake or two, but what defender in CONCACAF, young defender, isn't? Now, if you don't think he's good, go back and watch Mexico versus the U.S. men's national team at Azteca. Christian Pulisic may still be in his pocket.
Yeah, he at his best is very, very good, especially defensively. I think, to your point, and America fans especially will know this, there's some big mistakes in his game. And, you know, hopefully going to a place like Ajax is a place where you clean that up. Look, I think this is perfect. This is the perfect move. It's the perfect league.
Yeah.
It's the perfect club. You talk about maybe adjusting or improving on some of those defensive liabilities. When you go to a place like Ajax in the Eredivisie, you're going to get tested, right? We know it's a very open league. He's going to get tested some one-on-one. I also think his final product for a right back is not necessarily like world-class consistent yet. Dude, at Ajax, in that league, they're going to demand that of you. So I think, you know, when I think about the national team, you want a right back that can not just lock it down. In modern football, you want a guy who can get forward, create some assists, create some mismatches down that right flank. I think him going here is a really, really good opportunity for him to do that.
I just think it solidifies, it locks down his position as the top right back in the Mexican pool.
You think it does?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's another, the other good reason for Ajax is that they've just moved on a right back, right? Mazraoui's gone to Bayern Munich. He goes on a free, but that proves, I think, two things. One, that there's space here for Jorge Sanchez, and two, that it is what we already knew. Ajax is an amazing platform if it's going to give you the chance to go from a club like Ajax to eventually a place like
Only
Bayern
Munich.
Only
$3 million. Wow.
Right? Does that surprise you, that number?
In
that it's low or what?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, times have changed, but I was sold for $3 million in Cholos. So.
Okay. You were sold to $3 million.
That was back in the it was 10 years ago. Time.
Yeah. So there he is. The 24-year-old right back for Club America, Jorge Sanchez, is moving on to Ajax. Let's pull out a little bit bigger picture then, right? Because, of course, Jorge Sanchez, part of the Mexican national team. We know it's been a busy transfer window for Mexico players. We know also, Herc, it's been a very busy window for players in the U.S. men's national team pool. So as we look ahead to the upcoming World Cup, which national team do you think has had a better summer transfer window?
Why are you the way you are?
Busco polémica.
Yeah. Okay, if we're going on facts, it's got to be the U.S. men's national team, right?
What else do we go on this show?
No, because I know where you want to go with this. But, how can I say it's not a program that's shipping players off into the Premier League and setups like Crystal Palace, Leeds, Arsenal, sending players to the Bundesliga, to La Liga. I mean, yes, it's got to be the U.S. men's national team. I understand this. Like, we're in a world and in a time and an era where I shouldn't be surprised. But this still surprises me, right? I shouldn't be surprised, but this is now the norm.
So to me, it's not so much about where they're going. It's who's going, because those are guys who have huge roles within the U.S.
Yes.
Pool.
Yes, they have huge roles. And I love that it's Brendan Aaronson, Mr. Football America's. Love that it's Tyler Adams, Captain America. I think that's a true captain for the U.S. men's national team under Greg Berhalter. I love that they're impact players. Chris Richards could be the starting center back in the World Cup. I love all that. But it's not the U.S. men's national team program.
What?
It's the Mexican program.
All right, now you're just messing with me.
I never thought I would see the day, and certainly not in 2 weeks' time, because that's what we're seeing, where there's an exodus of players leaving Liga MX and heading to Europe at whatever level. Mm. Now, the American prospect has so many different avenues of getting to Europe.
Right.
A passport, academies, that are foreign academies in the States, USL, MLS, whatever the college, whatever the case may be. The Mexican players only have Liga MX. And for the longest time, they were held hostage by Mexican ownerships. Now you're getting Mexican ownerships who see the validity, who see value in being participants in the world market. I never thought I would see this. And now you have a plethora of players going abroad, young players, players that didn't do procesos, didn't knock it out of the park in Liga MX, weren't goal scoring champions, then left. Players that had, like Santi Jimenez, 5 goals, then leaves. All of a sudden, they recognize the value of the market. I never thought I would see that in Mexican football.
So it's impossible, I think, if we're just thinking about the current national team pool, 2022, this World Cup, not to say it's the United States, right? That list of players is going to have a much bigger role in Qatar. So them moving into good spots is going to much more quickly and positively impact the U.S. national team. The list of players that we saw for Mexico, the guys you were kind of reading off, they're very young.
Very young.
They're very, very young.
So 19.
Right. You got a lot of teenagers, guys. Omar Campos, Jordan Carrillo. These are guys who are 20, 21 years old at the max. So I think if you think about like 2026, there's going to be a big impact. But I'm with you. In terms of significance, this is business as usual, maybe a good summer of business as usual for the U.S. men's national team pool. This is groundbreaking. Yeah. It feels like maybe iceberg cracking. Groundbreaking might be too strong. It feels like the iceberg is cracking for the Mexican men's national team pool and getting players over to Europe. So in that way, I would say big picture, you could make the case this is more significant to Mexico. But I think in the here and now, it's got to be the U.S.
Yes, and here now it's the U.S., but look at the number of players, Mexican players that have left. I don't think you had that many transfers to Europe in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Left in the last 2 weeks.
We're also looking at this very much in like who had the better transfer window based on where people moved in a positive sense. There's also the discussion of well, what happened to guys who moved and did it hurt the team? Like, from a Mexico perspective, you got guys who left the European theater. You got Hache who left to go to Houston
Correct.
Dynamo. You got Araujo who left to come back to Club America. Maybe you would look at it from the U.S. perspective, too. A guy like Matt Turner, does him leaving consistent minutes and going to a place where he's probably not going to get minutes hurt the team as a whole?
We didn't really sign on the San Jose Earthquakes. I'm starting that one.
Oh, really? That's the next on your transfer rumor mill?
Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. Okay, well, listen, we got La Liga, of course, starting up soon on ESPN+. Club Friendly coming up this weekend. Tecatito Sevilla against Cádiz. Good little tune-up game. One of the final tune-ups ahead of the start of the La Liga season, which, of course, is next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Go to Major League Soccer. The good, the bad, and the ugly from a midweek in MLS. Start with a good. The Montreal Impact hurt with two goals in the last few minutes for a comeback 2-1 victory over Montreal. The first goal in the comeback, by the way, Kai Kamara hurt, now third all-time on the MLS scoring charts.
Yeah, let me get a second, my boy Kai. 37 years old, scores his 134th goal in Major League Soccer history. That's third all-time. There are only two people that have scored more goals than him in this league. One is Landon Donovan, the U.S. Men's National Team legend. The other is Chris Wondolowski, the all-time leading goal scorer. But for Kai Kamara, one of the best stories in Major League Soccer. I mean, from working Galaxy game days when I was a player, literally event game day, picking up trash, to being in the D3 college program, Dominguez Hills, to Major League Soccer, to Europe, to back to Major League Soccer, to being this. I mean, the guy's an all-time great guy, one of the best stories in Major League Soccer. This is great to see.
Absolutely. Another great story is Montreal right now. With these 3 points, they climb up to third place in the Eastern Conference, rolling quite along. And then Columbus, by the way, sixth right now in the East. They're in a real playoff dogfight. The bad, the transfer deadline. We're going to tie that in here. And this is really about the teams that didn't make a move, because we know there are some teams that did make big moves. Herc, of those who didn't make a move, who are you most disappointed in, most let down in?
The champ. I'm disappointed by the champs. New York City FC, not only did you lose your head coach midseason, all right, you don't have to replace him, fine, but you lost Tati Castellanos. I mean, you lost the face of the franchise. You lost the guy who scores the goals for you. Mm. And you're only 3 points away from Philly, the conference leader.
Right.
You're still, I would say, in theory of having, bringing in a piece or maybe two and being a legitimate contender to repeat. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I'm looking at the East. I think New York City is a team that, for me, kind of fits a different criteria, because right now they're very solidly above the playoff line. Not to say you don't need to replace a Tati Castellanos, but maybe you don't need to as urgently, right? I'm looking at big teams, big clubs, the clubs we expect to compete, where there is expectations, exigencia, and then I'm looking for those teams that are below the playoff line. And if I look in the East, I'm looking at a team like Atlanta United. If I look in the West, Turk, I'm looking at a team like the LA Galaxy, though they did make the Ricky Pooch big move.
Right.
I'm also looking, we saw the video there, at a team like Seattle, who right now are on the playoff line. They're seventh, but we found out today from Brian Schmetzer, it looked like they did have at least some interest in Luis Suarez. They don't end up getting him.
Wow.
You feel like Seattle, and hear me out here, you feel like Seattle might have made a move, not just because of what they're going through, all the injury issues, but because of what LAFC did. I think we can't ignore the bar that LAFC set for everybody.
You think it puts pressure on everybody else.
Especially in the West. Especially in the UCLAFC go out and do that. I feel if you're Seattle, if you're anybody who really wants to compete in the West, you almost had to do something to respond.
Yeah, Seattle's issues are more health, right? Joao Paulo goes down to ACL right before the season starts. You don't want to see that. Then his backup, who everybody's been saying is going to be crazy good, Obed Vargas, breaks his back literally. So you maybe need another nine because Rui Diaz has been injury prone this season. They don't do that. Luis Suarez, there was some interest there, maybe on both parties. Didn't happen. So, yes, maybe adding depth, maybe adding a actual playmaker that will do something there in that spine could have been good. But you look at a team like Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Like, theirs isn't just like, hey, we're waiting for guys to come back. Like, they're guys who are going to be just out. Ozzie Alonso, center, or as a defensive midfielder, he's out. He's been irreplaceable. Brad Guzan, Raul Gudiño comes in, you think he's going to be the replacement. He can't even play there. And then you don't know what's going on with Joseph. Do you really need to bring in that kind of big-name player to fill the shoes of when Joseph may leave? This could have been the time. It just felt like there's another missed opportunity for them as well.
You know, when I think of Atlanta and Seattle, I think there's also some context we have to give there. Darren Eales is leaving Atlanta right now. I wonder if in terms of like summer transfer window, the work that has to go into that, when somebody like that leaves the club, do you maybe miss an opportunity? Maybe it's a similar situation in Seattle. We've seen Garth Lagerwey linked to like a bunch of teams.
Atlanta being one of them. If I was Atlanta, I'd offer him a blank check.
Really? Really?
You see what I did there?
I see what you did there. No, but I think that can also kind of play a role in terms of getting these deals done, which teams were active, which teams weren't. Maybe some leadership change plays into that. Let's talk about the teams that did get big moves done over the course of the summer transfer window, because that's the next question here, Hercules Gomez, is of all the big moves that we saw across MLS, which team do you think was the biggest winner over the course of the summer transfer window?
Don't say Hercules Gomez. I feel like I'm in trouble.
Hercules Arthur Gomez.
Yeah, of the teams, the biggest, we're talking Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
LAFC. I'm talking about everybody in the world.
No, I'm talking LAFC. Let me tell you why LAFC, okay?
You took the easy route.
It's not the easy route. Let me tell you why. Because they were already in first place.
Right.
They were already killing it in Major League Soccer. They had regained Carlos Vela in that form that we'd not seen for the last 2 years. And what do? They get two of the best players of their generation. Giorgio Chiellini is one of the best defenders of his generation. He's a Euro champion, and he's coming in and he's taking the best possible approach to come in. Like, he's been as advertised. Hope he stays up, hope his body stays fit. But then you're getting a player like Gareth Bale, a player that arguably could be the best player in Major League Soccer, that's preparing for the biggest moment in his life. A player that's won 5 Champions League. If you could regain some of that magic. Oh, and by the way, there's a player in an offensive piece, Dennis Boanga, okay, of Gabon, who happens to be in the radar right now, LAFC. He can play anywhere in the front line. His team got relegated in Ligue 1. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the front line, as a center forward, left or right, you add those pieces together, there's just a rich getting richer here.
Do they have space on that front line? Do they have a need for another guy?
I don't know if they want another guy.
Chicho
Arango's a baller. If you're a team that needs a nine in Major League Soccer, Seattle Sounders, if you think Rui Diaz can't stay fit, or if you want extra competition, Chicho Arango's as good as it gets. I don't know what LAFC is thinking, but that's a baller right there.
In terms of best summer transfer window, I think there were really only two choices, or two like big time, if we're thinking star power choices. LAFC is one of them. The other one, the one that I'll go with, is Toronto FC. I think Toronto FC probably needed more, but I also think that they went out and made more. They did more over the course of the summer. It's, yes, Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. Those are the guys that I think you look at and you say, okay, these are the difference makers, not just on the field, but off the field. It feels very much, Herc, like TFC, the once big spenders of MLS in that regard, are back. But it's also guys like Marc-Anthony Kay, right? That's a significant addition. It's Richie Larea, right? Yeah. It's these moves, Richie Larea getting done kind of at the transfer deadline. It's those players that, to me, really are big
moves. Unloading Salcedo,
Unloading Carlos Salcedo as well is a big move that allows you to do some things. So I think I see what you're saying about LAFC. You will at least give me that Toronto FC, if they didn't have the best summer transfer window, are the most improved, right?
They're the most impressive. They're ability to want to push the envelope, because it's one thing to get Gareth Bale, to get Chiellini. I kind of understand that because it's Los Angeles. I've lived in Toronto. Toronto is beautiful. But to go out there and say, and the rumor mill is over $12 million a year for Insigne. To go out there and say, yes, pocketbook open, go get him if you think he's going to help you win, that is impressive.
Yeah, we talk about LAFC raising the bar. Toronto FC, as far as salaries are going, also are raising the bar across Major League Soccer as well. Let's get back to the good, bad, and ugly. With the ugly, and it has to do with a signing, Riqui Puig, who's about to join the LA Galaxy, of course, from Barcelona. That's the good news. The bad news is, Herc, there is leaked audio from Puig mocking his now former teammate, Ferran Torres. Let's listen in to hear exactly what Riqui Puig had to say.
Ferran Torres. Guardiola ni lo quería. Año pasado jugó 12 partidos.
All right, Herc. I wonder if you've ever been caught in a situation like this, any leaked audio from your past. What do you think about this? What do you make of it? And does it change your opinion of the Puig signing? Because I don't think anyone's been as high on this as you
have. Supposed.
Right. It was very garbled, right?
Okay, supposed. Okay, but he's not denied it.
If that is Riqui Puig, then does it change your perspective?
It changes my perspective of what I thought about him as a person, because it's not the first time we've heard something about Riqui Puig. Ronald Koeman actually came out and accused him of leaking information to the press, called him a bad apple pretty much in the locker room. But we've seen this in Major League Soccer. Hell, we've seen this in the LA Galaxy. We've seen a player who his colleagues around the league didn't like. He wasn't very well liked amongst his colleagues. Amongst his teammates, he berated and belittled his teammates.
I mean, are you going to compare Riqui Puig to Zlatan Ibrahimovic right now?
But what did Zlatan do that made everybody not care?
He scored.
He was productive.
Yeah.
He was productive. And Riqui Puig could be the worst human on earth. But if he is productive for the LA Galaxy, the LA Galaxy fans won't care. Ownership won't care. Chris Klein, Jovan Karowski, and that front office won't care because they are right now on the chopping block. And that's what it comes down to. What can you do on the field? What can you do for the guys? Because if he does well, okay, now I will reserve opinion until I hear the final dollar amount, because when we first started
talking. It sounds like this is a TAM deal, right?
When we first started talking about this, we were both under the impression that it was a loan. Now it's like, this is incredible. This is an incredible piece of business, but it's a permanent deal. So when the numbers come out, when the final numbers come out, I will give you an actual opinion of good deal, bad deal. But if you can get a player who was considered one of the crown jewels, and he's 22 years of age right now, and he gave you, let's just say, three productive years and a championship with the Galaxy, and then you, I don't know, sell him later on to France, to Spain, to Mexico, whatever, that's productive.
So you say that you're not that this could change how you view him as a person.
Correct.
And then you quickly kind of dismiss that, to say, if as long as he does well on the field, it'll take care of that. Isn't that the question, though, here with Riqui Puig? Isn't the person the question? Isn't that kind of the underlying thing? Hey, here's a guy who at 22, now 23 years old, is leaving Barcelona, is leaving that ambition to come to the LA Galaxy. We know previous coaches, Ronald Koeman, Xavi, have questioned his commitment to the game. I mean, isn't this the problem, that there are these off-field things that have held him back on the field?
Let's be honest. If he was a diva, if he was a bad person, but he was a good footballer for Barcelona, he would play. Doesn't matter. That's just a reality. And I don't think it's that crazy to think that a guy who is a bad apple, per se, at Barcelona couldn't completely do well in Major League Soccer, couldn't help out a team like the LA Galaxy.
All right, we'll see if he can help out the LA Galaxy. We know Riqui Puig won't be at the MLS All-Star Game, which, of course, is coming up next week in Minnesota, and we will be all over the coverage. It starts on Tuesday with the MLS All-Star Skills Challenge. Start around 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2, also streaming live on the ESPN app. And then Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, it's MLS versus Liga MX, the All-Star Game itself, from the land, Herc, of 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. Not 1,000 lakes, as I said last week.
They should be called the Lakers.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, let's move on to the women's game. Big news The U.S. women's national team announcing a friendly against England on October 7th to be played at Wembley Stadium. You want to know how quickly the tickets were flying off the shelves for this one? 65,000 tickets sold in the first few hours. In fact, the ticket sales site crashed. It'll be the reigning World Cup champions against now reigning European champions, provided England wrap up their World Cup qualifying campaign, which looks like they will do. The last meeting between these two, the She Believes Cup Herc, back in early 2020, the U.S. winning that game 2-0. We talked about this matchup or potential matchup on the last edition of Football Americas. Do you see this as a World Cup final preview?
Absolutely. I mean, the numbers indicate it, right? England just beat Spain, Sweden, and Germany to win the Euros. You consider the women's national team, the U.S. women's national team, to be the best team in the world. So they're clearly the best team in this hemisphere. You're going to pit up the two best teams in each hemisphere. This is clearly a World Cup final preview. You're going to see the cream of the crop, and the U.S. women will be tested. The U.S. women will be tested on foreign soil because we know how good they are on American soil, but they'll be tested on foreign soil.
Yeah, that's really the question for me here, though, because foreign soil applies to England as well, right? England is a team that won this tournament on home soil. What does that look like when you're not playing in front of 65,000 of your fans, when it's not Wembley that's packed? I think that's going to be a huge difference in this. I think the U.S. women, obviously, as I said last week, are the more likely of these two to reach the final in 2023. I don't know that England will be as dominant away from home. I think they were a little bit lucky to get past Germany in extra time. And I think really, if you look back at that Spain game, Herc, they really, really just got the job done against Spain at the end. And it's a Spain without Alexia. It was a Spain without Jenny Hermoso. And those players, Alexia will be very, very close. Her timing will be very close to see if she gets back in time for the World Cup. But I think Spain is a very, very good shout to be in the World Cup final in 2023.
I do as well. But you're telling me you have confidence the U.S. women's national team would have beat Spain, then beat Sweden, and then beat Germany?
Well, at the last World Cup, they beat Spain.
No, stop talking about what
then
happened
beat
in the last
France,
World Cup.
Then they beat England.
Team.
Then they
this
beat the
This is a
Dutch.
Very young U.S. women's national team. This is a very new team.
Yeah.
It's not the same team.
No, absolutely. And it's not the same team as in England either.
Okay.
England is a very different team from...
But England just won the Euros.
No, totally. I know. And I'm actually contributing to your point here to say that England has changed a lot, not just from 2019 when the U.S. beat them in the semifinals, but also from that She Believes Cup game, right? Neville was the coach. Serena Wiegmann's now in charge. The U.S. looked totally different as well. So it'll be a very, very interesting game. That, no doubt about it. A sold out Wembley on October 7th for the USA against England will be a lot of fun as our coverage of the women's game continues here on Football Americas.
Sends the ball right up past the keeper. South Georgia goes ahead 1-0. Simmons drills that one. A shot and a goal! Simmons! The shot. And that one blocked. Another big save. Wenga. Oh, and that one got past Sarah Fuller. And Tormenta has taken a 2-1 lead. And this will do it.
This is insane! And we just won the final!
Joining us next on Football Americas, Amanda Vandervoort. She's the president of the USL Super League, which kicks off in 2023, as well as the president of the USLW League, which just wrapped up its inaugural campaign about a week and a half ago. Amanda, welcome to the show. Great to have you.
Oh, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we were just talking about this big game coming up between England and the United States. Of course, it's a friendly, going to be played at Wembley, big crowd expected, but you were actually at the Euro 2022 final. So tell us a little bit about that experience, especially from the perspective of somebody that works in the women's game.
You know what, 87,000 people in that stadium, it was so loud. I think that's the thing that sticks with me is the environment, the sound, the energy, and then all the emotion and the lead up to the game. You know, with women's soccer has exploded in the past several years. And right now we're really seeing the fruits of that with you know, the Euro final at Wembley, but you've seen clubs across Europe over the last, over the last several months, really topping records, 91,000 at Barcelona, 87,000 this weekend at Wembley. It's just, it's unbelievable.
It's an incredible level. But from that level, that stage, what kind of lessons can you take and apply to the USL Super League or the USL W League?
Yeah, there's, I think, the focus when you look at what happened, you know, along the way, the buildup, the planning, the progress that's gone in to in England in particular, I think if we're looking at that as an example, there's been, they focus on sustainability and on revenue and on engaging fans and players in the development and growth of the game. And so to be where they are today in Europe, in England specifically, and that country winning the European title is just unbelievable. And it's been a process of growth and development for several years to get there. And so we take that lesson and look at how we're going to build the Super League from a position of sustainability as well.
No doubt about it. England against Germany was a great final. Speaking of great finals, we also had the W League final. South Georgia Tormenta there getting the crown over Minnesota Aurora in what was a fantastic game, one we featured here on Football Americas. I wonder, Amanda, as you look back on the first year of that league, kind of how you assess what you were able to accomplish in the first 12 months.
Listen, we had 44 teams in 7 regions across the country. And the energy, the excitement, we had 6,500 people at that final in Minneapolis. It was, again, it was loud. It was engaged. The fans were loving it. We're super proud of the journey that we've taken to offer pre-professional soccer in a very professional manner. We've had standards and the players consistently time and time again thanked me for creating this environment where they could play, you know, soccer in that complements their collegiate season, but at such a high level.
You know, Amanda, out of all the teams that have kind of surprises or coming out of nowhere, Minnesota Aurora is one of the teams that's really stood out. And I'm not just talking about those sweet jerseys, by the way, size large, and the little guy next to me is a small. Yeah, but they're a regular on Football America's top 10. I mean, how have they done it? How have they managed just come exploding out of the gates?
I think it's a combination of knowing who they are and what they stand for. They really understand their brand identity. So they're women led, but they're also community owned. So they engaged the community in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, the Twin Cities as owners. So they have 3,080 community owners of that club. And I think that really created this sense of, you know, people coming together and building this club alongside with the leadership, alongside with the players. And so, you know, when you're in that stadium, you just feel this sense of camaraderie, of support, of fandom that you know resonates, I think, with their kind of founding position and why they brought that group together.
So let's look ahead then to the first season of the Super League, and I'm interested here particularly in the differences, because the way they're labeled, I think you use the term pre-professional, semi-professional for the W League, but more fully professional, right, for the Super League. Like, I think most people have an idea of the differences between pro and semi-pro, but specifically, how do you think it'll manifest itself, the difference between those two leagues and the two levels?
Yeah, so we talk a lot about the pathway, right? That's something that hasn't really been developed yet in a systematic way in the United States. So we see youth players going on to the college game and then maybe into the pros. But what we're actually building is this youth to pro model where players have a clear and direct process and way to get into professional soccer. So we see the W League quite complementary to the Super League. The W League today exists, like I said, a pre-professional league. All the players in the league are amateur, so they can still compete at the college level. But we have scouting networks, talent ID, recruiting systems for the players and for the coaches, administrators, executive staff throughout the W League so that they can move on and work in the professional game and be professionals in women's soccer, which is an opportunity that's you know slim and hard to come by today. So we're on the path to providing more teams, more opportunities for the professionalism of women's soccer in this country. And both the Super League and the W League are critical components to that pathway.
Well, speaking of that pathway, that pyramid, what will the relationship with the NWSL look like for you guys? Will it be something like more of a direct competitor or maybe like a feeder league?
You know, the NWSL and us, I think we're all invested in the growth of women's soccer. And especially when you see, like we just talked about, what's happening around the world and the explosion of interest in the United States. So we're all driving in the same direction related to the growth of women's soccer. And, you know, we're focused on building the most competitive women's soccer programs and professional soccer programs in our markets across this country as they are. And I think that that's awesome because it creates more opportunity for everyone in the game to invest, involve, you know, and grow together in the professionalism of soccer.
All right, Amanda, we really appreciate the time here on Football America's continued success, and keep us in the loop. Anytime you got breaking news on expansion announcements, you know who to call. Your boys here at Football America's.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, you guys, for having me on. The Aurora jersey's on the way.
Yes. There we go.
Yes. Bayern Munich and Canadian men's national team superstar Alphonso Davies in the news. He's going to donate his World Cup winnings to charity, Herc. What a feel-good story.
What an awesome guy. I mean, literally an awesome guy, great role model. And for people saying, well, it could not be that much money, it could be a lot of money. Mm. 2010, we made it out of the second round.
How much did I pay you? How much you get?
It was like $260,000.
$260,000.
Yeah, I mean, well, after the U.S. government and then the South African government, it was not that much.
Okay, well, good on Alphonso then. Cesc Fabregas, how about this? He signed with Serie B's Como. That's not really the news because he was linked to a lot of Major League Soccer teams. It's what he said about MLS that's the news. Quote, the MLS was not part of my plans. Ooh, he used the. That'll get everybody fired up. I wanted to remain in Europe, and I believe this is the right project for me. I wasn't interested in money. I wanted to join a long-term project that I would be enthusiastic about. Ooh, Herc, I don't know. Is this get lost? Shots fired? What do we make of what Cesc Fabregas is saying there? Serie B better than Serie B? Sorry, better
all right.
MLS than the MLS?
We got to stop at I wanted to stay here in Europe. End of discussion. Okay. End of conversation.
Right.
Not comparing projects, because I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people that said, well, MLS is a project. Wherever you go, if you're a guy like Cesc Fabregas, that is a project. Look at Giorgio Chiellini. You could have been that type of player, that influential player with maybe something to still offer on the field. I'm not upset at Cesc Fabregas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm upset he's not playing in Major League Soccer. Now, there are going to be those who are going to say, wait, what does Cesc Fabregas have to offer you in Major League Soccer today? Same thing Giorgio Chiellini can offer you in Major League Soccer today. Major League Soccer should have done what they could to offer him a similar situation like Giorgio Chiellini, because you are better for it as a franchise, whatever franchise it is.
Yeah, yeah, we talk about star power all the time, and Cesc Fabregas isn't like a superstar, I don't think, in terms of like the American market, but it's one of those names that we get soccer shows talking about, Major League Soccer, not just here in the United States, but around the world. So yeah, I think it is a little bit of a loss for MLS. I think the reality, though, here is you have to think about kind of what Cesc Fabregas is, right? He wouldn't be getting a sweetheart designated player deal, right? He'd be getting a, look, if Gareth Bale's coming on a TAM deal, I think it's safe to say Cesc Fabregas is coming on a TAM deal or less. I think that one of the parts of his deal at Como is that he's going to be a stakeholder.
Right.
You know, so that to me is when he says long-term project. That's what he's getting at. He's going to have a long-term play with the Serie B team. By the way, have you seen where Como plays their games?
Where do they play?
Beautiful stadium right on the water. That's, you know, I think that has a lot to do with it as well. That they're right on one of the, our producer saying he could be on one of the 10,000 lakes there in Minnesota. All right. Hey, by the way, earlier in the show, we were talking about two teams that are in MLS kind of struggling, maybe didn't take advantage of the summer transfer window. They're going to face off on Saturday, Atlanta United against the Seattle Sounders on ABC, ESPN Deportes, streaming live on the ESPN app. Who's calling that game on Deportes?
Richard Mendez and your boy. And if you're on ABC, turn the sap button on.
Nah. Vamos!
Axel Rapsa now as animated as he's been all season. Marmoush to take. It's on! Oh, he's there! It's Sasha Kalajdzic! Stuttgart! Score the goal that will mean Bundesliga survival!
Joining us next on this edition of Football America's New Jersey native Pellegrino Matarazzo, who's going into his fourth season in charge of Stuttgart in the Bundesliga. And just as importantly for us here on the show, this is, I don't know if it's fourth, I think it's your third appearance on Football America. So Pellegrino, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You look very well rested. You look full of color. What is an off season like for a Bundesliga coach? Because it looks like you've enjoyed it.
Well, I don't think it's just the off season that's given me this color. We've been spending a lot of hours on the pitch, and it's been hot here in Germany. So, but the off season was surely the first couple weeks. You know, you reflect the season, you think about what happened and what you want to do better. You start planning the next season. So there's a lot of thoughts going on, processes involved with staff, with leaders of the club, and then you, of course, there's a couple weeks where you get the rest. Where I spent with my family at the beach, which was very nice. And then preseason starts up again sooner than you expect. But then you're rip-raring ready to go, and you start. But the color is from my time in the pitch and not from vacation.
We saw those videos last year. Who was that and where was that? Tell us a little bit about that, because people were really excited to see how excited your family was at the results there at the end of the season.
Yeah, they get together almost actually every game in my brother's garage in Bergen County, and sometimes friends come over. They get a pretty decent crowd going. They call it the arena. And I think everyone saw the flags and all the memorabilia just posted or hung up on the walls, and they just go crazy. You know, and it's nice to see. Every once in a while, my family sends me one or two clips of a goal that. Their celebration, which is a nice feeling to know and to see that they're very connected to the game and being a part of it.
On this show, we talk a lot about the idea of promotion and relegation, and even as how it might pertain in the future to American soccer. I got to be honest, I'm a proponent of at least the idea and exploring it a little bit. But I think that's as somebody who's not had to live through it and suffer through a relegation battle. Having gone through that now, the real threat of relegation, how do you feel about promotion and relegation? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
I think it's for the fans, it's a very, very good thing. I think you know, things just stay very. How do you say? The tension remains, and there's a word in German called Spannung, which I think fits very well. Just very, very exciting. You know, it's of course the relegation. Battles or just fighting against relegation is very stressful for coaches and for teams, but it keeps the league very interesting. And the experiences that we had, a lot of the guys on the team, and also my experience, was the first time we went through something like that, and it's pretty intense. You know, it's you know, just waking up every day thinking about the next game, the next day, the next minute, like what to do, what to give the team, which either gives them energy or gives them stability. Very intense process, and something very special about it.
What are your expectations for the campaign coming up? You know, it's been two kind of different seasons in the Bundesliga for you. Where do you set the bar for this year?
We're going to take it one day at a time, one game at a time, like we did last year. I think the guys are ausstrahlen. They're exuding, I think is the word. Exuding.
Yeah. Yeah.
A certain, like a focus, which is a different focus that we had last season, a readiness, a sharpness, which I like, which makes me very, very optimistic about the season coming up. The guys are working hard and putting in the hours, the minutes that we need to be ready for this season. I think very is important is always the beginning of the season, how you start the first couple games to gain stability, to gain self-confidence, to grow, to have that bestätigung, confirmation that you're good enough, that you're on the right path, and that what you've worked for was for a reason. And so I think the beginning of the season is always very, very important, especially for a young team. And look forward to a good start, and then see what happens. But the goal is, of course, to stay in the league. That's not going to change.
Pellegrino, as we look big picture kind of at the Bundesliga season, the elephant in the room, of course, is Bayern Munich. Do you feel like the league this season maybe might be catching up to the giants of German football?
We have other very interesting clubs in the Bundesliga, which I'm sure will be very competitive with Borussia Dortmund, with Bayer Leverkusen, RB Leipzig. I think there will be one or two maybe surprises that are trying to make a run for it for a Champions League spot. I think Bayern Munich does have the best roster. They have will be feeling a little pressure this year, and they have a very good coach. So I, if I had to bet on who's going to be German champion, it's going to be Bayern Munich again this year. Yeah.
Of course, we got the World Cup in the middle of the season. I wonder how that affects your preparations and just kind of the Bundesliga in general. It's this huge event in the middle of the season, something we've never had before, you know, to this level.
It's, you know, I'm about learning as you go, you know, and making good decisions and thought through decisions. For us, it's more about how are we going to deal with the break? How many weeks are we going to give off? We're actually coming to the States. I don't know if it's official. I think it's official. We're going to be a week in Austin, from the 14th to the 21st, playing a friendly match in Austin, and after that we'll be giving the guys a couple weeks off. And then you think about how to deal with preparation. Do you give the guys a week off during Christmas or not? You know, for the guys that live overseas to be home with their families. So it's you know, you think about things and you make decisions and how to best prepare for the second half of the season to come.
What do you think of the group that the U.S. has drawn, and just how excited are you to see this team in Qatar?
I'm very excited always to see the U.S. team and how they do. I think they have a lot of potential, I read every once in a while things about, you know, the U.S. team well in the World Cup when it's on our own soil, but, you know, we have a good team now and a lot of potential. So I'm really excited to see what they can do. And of course, you always hope for them to come as far as possible and hope for the best.
All right, that's a ways down the road. More importantly, right in the near future, we have the Bundesliga opener against Leipzig. You mentioned how important a good start to the season is. What's the big key there to get 3 points in your opener?
Well, Leipzig's a very, very good team with very good individual players who put a lot of focus on control. They like to control the game through like a compact defense, not always high press, just closing down spaces with a good counterattack game. They, with their possession, they don't have a very high direct speed, which means they don't go immediately to goal, but to kind of try to break down the opponent and create numbers up on in certain situations, and they have the skill to do that as well, which means we need to be very, very focused defensively, be patient defensively, wait for the moment to win balls, and with certain speed players that we have also on the pitch to use our counterattack moments. And there's, you know, I don't want to say too much before the game. I never do. I never communicate my match plan, just because I don't know who's listening. I don't know if the Domenico Tedesco is listening or not. But of course, there's spaces that open up when we have possession that we want to utilize with speed, and hoping to score one or two goals, and hoping for a win.
You got fans in Stuttgart. You got fans in the arena in Bergen, New Jersey. You got fans here on Football Americas. Pellegrino Matarazzo, thank you so much. We'll be rooting for you all season. Hope you have you back here on the show again soon.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Always great to chat with Pellegrino Matarazzo, the New Jersey native in charge of Stuttgart in the Bundesliga. By the way, for the extended version of that interview, make sure to download the Football Americas podcast. Good luck to Matarazzo and Stuttgart in the upcoming Bundesliga campaign. Of course, you can see it right here on ESPN+. First game of the season is tomorrow, but on Saturday, mark your calendars. Dortmund against Leverkusen, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coverage starts on ABC, ESPN Deportes, and right here on ESPN+. We're making a lot of baby steps because we are going next week to Minnesota for the All-Star Game. We'll be there for coverage of the All-Star Game Skills Challenge on Tuesday.
We'll be there this week.
Yes, you're right. We're heading out there on Sunday. And actually, we will be doing the Monday edition of Football Americas live from Minnesota with plenty of guests from both Major League Soccer and Liga MX. So that's it for us. For Herc, I'm Sebi. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week from the land of 10,000 lakes. Look at my
really
gear,
more like
bro.
9,000.
Look at that. Finally, I beat you on the gear front.
Medium. They're supposed to send it. They didn't send it. Well, it's lost in the mail, I guess.